And we're about to be joined by one of my favorite all-time guests from the Kauffman Show. He is the sports editor for The Nation. You can see him on ESPN. You can read him in the New York Times. You can read him at Deadspin. And today, you can read him on Grantland.com. He wrote an article that doesn't normally get the type of play on Grantland.com that you would expect. They're usually reviewing Mad Men and Jonah Carey cracking Simpsons jokes and writing baseball analysis. But today they went a step deeper, and Lord knows I was happy to see it. Let's welcome Dave Zirin back to the show. Hello, Dave.
Hey, great to be here, Kauffman. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Anytime, man. Really happy to see your article today on Grantland. I thought it was awesome that you you tackled this Sochi boycott issue.
Well, it's because, to me, there are very good people making very different arguments, people who want the same things, people who want to see a Russia that doesn't criminalize people for being gay, a Russia that doesn't throw people in prison for saying that they think there should be gay rights, a Russia that doesn't throw tourists in prison who said they think there should be gay rights. Like, if you went to Russia right now and said, I think there should be gay rights, they can put you in jail for 2 weeks, according to their new decrees. And that would mean, as I put in the article, that the Pope, based on his recent statements, could be arrested by Putin's government for some of the things he said. So there are people who want to see action taken. There are people who don't want Putin using the Olympics without being challenged for his own prestige. Some people are saying boycott. Other people are saying maybe we should try a different strategy.
Now, Patrick Burke, very famously from You Can Play, came out last week and said there should not be an athlete boycott. And I think you're in the same corner as that, that there are better ways to make this happen, better ways to show Russia what they're doing is wrong.
Yeah, and to be clear, the position that Patrick have and I have, and we are simpatico on this, and you did a terrific interview with Patrick on this, by the way.
Thank you.
Is the big difference is this isn't the same as what, for example, Johnny Weir is saying. Johnny Weir is a openly gay figure skater, of course. And Johnny Weir has said, no boycott. If we're out there and we show our excellence on the field, that will be a spit in the eye to Putin, and that's what it's all about, because the Olympics really aren't about politics. This isn't Putin's time, it's our time. And that sounds good, but it's just not the truth.
No.
I mean, it's just not true. I mean, we could say all we want that the Olympics are about sports, they're about the athletes, the country is just the host, but it's just not true.
Anybody who's ever seen an opening ceremonies, Dave, I think, you know, the idolization of a country that you see going on in an opening ceremonies.
Exactly. And then you have to think, well, who benefits from that idolization? It's who's ever in power. It's whoever made the bids. It's whoever made the payoffs. And that, of course, has the attendant effect. Take a place like Sochi, which is $30 billion over budget in terms of making the Olympics happen. It's a way of saying to the whole country, hey, look, it was all worth it. It was all worth it. So it's an amazingly political moment, though, not just the opening ceremonies, but the entire games. And so there needs to be something. And so instead of the Jesse Owens approach, let's call what Johnny Weir is saying the Jesse Owens approach, mm-hmm. You know, just going, just like Owens went to Hitler's Berlin in 36 and was excellent, which was not a small thing, certainly, but instead more of a John Carlos and Tommy Smith approach, which is using the platform to actually make a statement, to basically what people would be doing would be daring Putin to arrest them.
Which, you know, for an athlete, isn't going to happen. But I think members of the media, I think that fans showing up, I think everybody, you know, the lover of an athlete going there to support their partner, we're leading ourselves down a very, very rosy garden path if we think that there aren't going to be problems.
You know, it's interesting, though, what you just said, I think, is absolutely correct, which is they wouldn't dare arrest an athlete for such a thing during the Olympics. But even if they don't dare arrest an athlete, that would be a huge deal for Russia's domestic politics, because one of the leading members of their parliament said this week, the co-writer of the bill that basically criminalizes gay life in Russia, the co-writer of the bill said they would arrest people. They would arrest any athlete who does anything that violates the law. I don't think that's going to happen. But when they don't arrest an athlete for speaking out, all of a sudden this lawmaker, his name is Milanov, he's very powerful in Russia, all of a sudden he looks like a horse's patootie, and that's a good thing.
Dave, we saw, of course, the you know, Summer Olympics in Beijing in 2008, and we've seen countries that we don't necessarily agree with host Olympics before. And frankly, more and more that we see what a financial boondoggle the Olympics are, the less westernized countries seem to be applying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but some of that is also, that's the IOC, because the IOC wants to be able to have a place where not only they can have financial boondoggles and global growth economically is happening much more in these BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, than it is in Western Europe, the United States, Canada. Growth has been much more sluggish there. But also they want countries that can put forward the kind of security apparatus and, if necessary, put down protests with extreme prejudice. We certainly did see that in China in 2008. It's an open question to me whether we're going to see it in Brazil. And I think in Sochi, Vladimir Putin has shown that he is willing to do just that, which once again makes the fact that people are already calling marches to coincide with the opening ceremonies. It makes already we're seeing courageous political acts.
I think that the fact that China owns half the world's debt prevented people from speaking out in a proper way in 2008. And I think that a lot of the detractors from a lot of people who are saying that something shouldn't be done, that this is just the way it is and it's how it should be, point to China and the lack of action there.
Yeah, but it's, what's interesting, too, is I totally put so much of that on the IOC, about as corrupt a body as you can imagine, as long as you're not imagining FIFA. And because people like Joey Cheek, who's a gold medal Olympian, Joey Cheek had his visa revoked. He was trying to go to China to be part of protest there. He was denied that opportunity by the Chinese government. The IOC didn't do squat. I'm 1/1,000th. The sort of person in terms of stature, maybe 1/1,000,000,000th of Joey Cheek. But I tried to go to, I put in a media credential to go over to China. It was rejected by China. I was not allowed to go over there because they thought, I mean, I assume they looked at some of the things I'd written and didn't want me over there. I have to assume that happened to other people. I know people who went over there to do zap actions, particularly around the issue of Tibet. And they said it was like the craziest thing they'd ever seen. Like they unfurled a banner in the middle of Beijing. And they were scooped up, like, faster than you could say Men in Black.
It's scary, isn't it? The idea that they try to pretend that this isn't a political event when it's, I mean, everything about it. Maybe just the part that 10 seconds of competition isn't political, but everything else is so bloody politicized.
Right. Swirling around those 10, 20, 30 magic seconds. And what they're really banking on is that we love the two-minute floor routine, the 10-second sprint, whatever the case may be, they're banking on the fact that we love that so much, we'll put up with all the other crap. Or maybe they're just banking on the fact that a lot of us have TiVos now and DirecTV or what have you, and we'll just fast-forward right through it and not see it and go right to the events. But either way, I really think, and I think, frankly, this is true of all sports, that they're counting on us eating a lot of you-know-what to get that little bit of sugar.
Yeah, but you know what? Part of that is also drinking a lot of Coca-Cola, a company based in Atlanta, Georgia. And I wonder if, you know, just the sympathetic population in the world were to say, hey, I'm not going to drink Coke. I'm not going to use this Olympic product. We're at the day and age where that has more of an effect than anything political because they're the ones who pay the politicians.
You know, that's actually a terrific point, because one of the great things I love about social media, and yes, there's a lot to hate about social media, not the least of which it's like J. Edgar Hoover's nocturnal emission. We put all our personal information online and it's just out there for everybody to see. Not trying to sound paranoid, but it's kind of crazy when you think about it. But the one thing I love about social media is that you get to have these kinds of discussions. And I put my article up today and someone put out a really cool plan to say, I said, I agree with you. Athletes shouldn't boycott. But what if there was a simultaneous corporate boycott to protest the fact that the International Olympic Committee hasn't been saying jack about Russia's laws? And it was actually, I think that's a really clever, interesting idea, which I bet gains steam as the day grows close.
We've got a few minutes left with Dave Zirin from The Nation, from Grantland.com, from a lot of great places. Follow him on Twitter at Edge of Sports. Dave, before we let you go, I want to ask you about this article you wrote this week for The Nation about the city of Detroit. A city that is planning to finance a $656 million hockey arena for Mr. Illich and his pizza, Little Caesars Red Wings.
Yeah, friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your pensions. It's amazing. Like Detroit is in the throes of bankruptcy. What that means in practice is that if you're making a $19,000 a year pension, the city is going to pay you basically 10 cents on the dollar. Of your pension. I mean, they're just gutting any sense of municipal life in the city. And to have them announce that, and then the same week have it announced that they were going ahead with this arena, to me it was stadium economics through the crazy looking glass, like the sort of thing that if someone wrote it in fiction, you wouldn't think it was serious. Like, yeah, we have no money except for the billionaire pizza owner guy. And that's the sort of thing. I mean, this isn't just my voice on this at all. There's a lot of rounds of criticism really asking, what are the priorities for Michigan?
One of the things that really struck me in your article, something I learned about many, many years ago, the murals painted by Diego Rivera that are iconic visions. This was Frida Kahlo's husband. And these were the iconic visions of what a socialist auto workers industry in Detroit would look like in the future. And it looks like they're going to have to sell those in order to pay for the, for crying out loud, the average civil servant's salary in Detroit is $19,000 a year. So I guess it'll pay for a few years and for a couple of streetlights, and maybe the cops will show up in 45 minutes instead of the 58 right now. But this is a scary situation, and they just did this with a football stadium, and they just did this with a baseball stadium.
Yeah, and like I quote Stephen Colbert in the article saying that Rivera's mural is going to be sold to the Museum of Irony, which is, I think, right on. The art sales may not go through. There's been enough uproar about this, especially because it's penny wise, pound foolish. Like, I mean, they're going to get not too much for the art, and then what's it really going to do in terms of getting Detroit out of an $18 billion bankruptcy? But I'll tell you this, if you're trying to dig yourself out of an $18 billion hole, there is no economic evidence that says $300 million into Mike Ilitch's pocket is the way to do it.
You know, maybe the fine people of South Florida who just got bilked into building a stadium could write a nice letter to the city of Detroit and remind that. And not only that, Dave, people are moving out of there in droves. So who's going to sit in this stadium? Who's going to pay to sit and go to these games?
Well, that's the worst part of it, is that, you know, Detroit is still a great hockey town, but it's a suburban hockey town. I mean, people are coming from outside of Detroit. And so people coming from outside to go into Detroit, they're not going to stay in Detroit and spend money. They're not going to stay in Detroit and hang out. They're not going to stay in Detroit if there's no infrastructure in Detroit. The whole thing, I mean, it's got economic disaster written all over it. But, hey, at least 87-year-old Mike Ilitch is happy, and I think that's the most important thing, that his future will be financially secure.
We'll play out, Dave, on one of your favorite tunes here, Marco. Let's bump this up.
Better not be Robin.
He's the best guest on the Kaufman Show for a reason. Follow him at Edge of Sports. Dave, thank you so much for your time tonight.